Good morning. It's great to see everyone out this morning. I blame Mike for me being up here this morning. A couple weeks ago when Heath was out of town, James Overton had the opportunity to preach, and unfortunately his flight got canceled in Toledo and couldn't make it. Being in charge of the month of responsibilities, I thought, well, I'll just pull a file out of the filing cabinet there and just preach it without thinking. And then I thought, I better ask Mike, because I'm sure, Mike was letting known that he wasn't going to be here as well. And fortunately, John Sellers was able to preach both. So I had a sigh of relief. And if you guys had known about it, you probably would have had a relief too. But Mike, being the guy he is, says, you know what, I got an opening in 2 weeks. So that stress came right back. So, but no, I'm always glad that I can get up here and preach a message from God's Word. And even though it's not something I'm always comfortable doing, it's something I need to do. And I think we all should strive to teach in one way or another. So this morning I'm going to be bringing a lesson to you that I've done many times in the past, so it's familiar with me. And it kind of goes along with the lesson, the fashion we've had this whole year with our VBS and our youth lectureship. And I want to be talking more towards the youth today, even though we're going to find that it applies to us all. One thing I'm going to do different in today's lesson that I've done in the past times that I've done this lesson, I'm going to introduce it a little bit different because I think it's going to help us get our mindset where it needs to be. And the one thing that I want just you to think about as we're going through the next few minutes here is, what brings the most joy in your life? There's no right or wrong answer, but just what brings that joy to your life? And when you think about something that brings joy to you, don't we do everything we can to protect it? Don't we make sure that nothing takes it away from us? Well, I'm going to share with you what my joy is. This joy, this dog in this picture is my joy. No, this family, these children, that's what makes me get up in the morning, makes me do what I want to do. And I want, and we all say, we're going to do everything we can to protect it and make sure that they are where they need to be. So what's your joy? There's many things in our life that brings us joy. But I think if we're honest with ourselves, our children, our family, those that, and I would hope so, I would hope that we would all consider this family here, every one of us, all these pictures that I'm showing you right now bring us joy in our life, or should. You know, the things that one of these children or one of these families, if they're rejoicing, we should rejoice. And if they're weeping, we should weep as well. So I just want you to continue to think, what brings you the true joy in life? And I think we'd all agree on the same thing. So what brings you this joy? You know, what brings that joy in your life? And we need to ask ourselves, what are we going to do to keep that joy in our life? And I think on the surface, we all say the same thing, and we all want the same thing. But what are we going to do to keep that joy? And first of all, I think we have to understand that we have to be the example in our own life. And I'm kind of focusing this more onto us as the older right now. But we have to be the example. We have to show them how to be a good citizen. We have to show them how to be a husband, how to be a wife, how to be a man, how to be a woman. We need to teach them or take an active part of their life. We talked a little bit on our Bible class last Wednesday in the adult class. It was focused more towards the woman's role. But we kind of tied that into a relationship, but we also need to continue tying that into our family and showing them and taking that time for one another and being an active part in their lives. And we need to teach them to love. Love conquers all. I think we all know that. But this love, we need to teach them how to love. We need to who to love and when to love. So with that in mind, I want to talk now on how shall the young secure their heart. The song we sang earlier, I thank Matt for singing that, is really the basis of this entire lesson. How shall the unsecure their heart? We know that this song comes from Psalms 119 and verse 9, where it says in the New King James Version, "How can a young man cleanse his ways?" The New American Standard Version says, "How can a young man keep his ways pure?" So, again, this lesson, I want to direct it more towards the young, but we all have a responsibility. The young have a responsibility to secure their own hearts, but we as adults have to find a way to exhort the young to where they can keep their lives and their hearts pure. So kind of going to the first point here, we need to separate ourselves. As young people, we need to separate ourselves from places and people of sin. We find in 1 Corinthians 2, verses 6 through 14, "Be ye not unequally yoked with unbelievers." Before I go any further, Andrea thought I was a little silly for doing this, but we're trying to point this lesson to the younger. And, you know, I kind of know what unequally yoked means, but does anyone else? I mean, with farming these days, you don't really see that anymore. So I wanted to kind of bring a picture here of what unequally yoked is. Usually there's two cows that have this yoke between them that's keeping them bound together. And when they're working together, they're going straight. They're plowing the fields the way they need to. But if they're not on the same page, you either go to the left or go to the right. But you've got to go one direction because they're tied together. So when we talk about not being unequally yoked with unbelievers, when we yoke ourselves, when we tie ourselves together with an unbeliever, we have to go one way or the other. And unfortunately, we may tend to go towards the unbelief. So what fellowship hath righteousness with unrighteousness? And what communion with light and with darkness? So we see here that there's righteousness and unrighteousness. There's light, there's darkness. We can tell that those are two opposites. You know, we talk about oil and water sometimes. These things just cannot mix with each other. And we need to avoid them and separate ourselves from that. So we need to choose our friends wisely. 1 Corinthians 15 and verse 33 says, "Be not deceived. Evil communications corrupt good manners," or good morals. But be not deceived. Think about that. How many times we as young, and I think if we all reflect back to our youth, if you pass that age, haven't we tried to deceive ourselves sometimes? Well, I can be at this place, or I can do these things, but I'm not going to do the things that my friends are doing, but I'll just be around that. But we're warned to be not deceived, because those things can easily take us over. So these friends, these so-called friends that we have growing up, we have to choose wisely because they have and they will have a strong influence over our lives. You know, there's many times that we know, we just know when we're not somewhere we should be. Unfortunately, sometimes we get into situations in all good conscience and then we realize we probably shouldn't be here, but typically maybe we just stick around because you want to try to fit in. But take that stand, which we'll talk a little bit later, but you know, don't be afraid to call your parents and say, "Hey, I'm not where I'm supposed to be. I need help." But then, us as parents, be thankful that they're calling us. You know, typically our first reaction is, "All right, you're in trouble because you know you're not supposed to be there." But we forget the point that they called. They wanted to avoid that, even though they were in a place they shouldn't be. But then we also know when we're with friends we shouldn't be. So choose those friends wisely. We find in Romans 12 and verse 2, "Be not conformed to this world, but be ye transformed by the renewing of your mind, that you may prove what is that good and acceptable and perfect will of God." We're told not to be conformed to this world. Or we're told not to be joined to the things of this world because they can corrupt us. And we definitely don't want to love this world. There's many things in this world that are great and we have fun with and they're not bad in themselves, but when we choose them, we love them more so than we love God and put it in place of God, we find ourselves in trouble. I'd like to look at 1 John. If you'll turn to 1 John 2. Just kind of proving this point a little bit further, that we're not to love the world. 1 John 2, starting in verse 15 when you get there. "Love not the world, neither the things that are in the world. If any man love the world, the love of the Father is not in him. For all that is in the world, the lust of the flesh, the lust of the eyes, and the pride of life, is not of the Father, but of the world. And the world passes away, and the lust thereof, but he that doeth the will of God abideth forever. So these things that overtake us, these lust of the eyes, the lust of the flesh, and the pride of life, we're told that this is not coming from God. This is things that the world is taking over our lives. And that's where it comes from. And we need to understand that. So we're not to love the world. Something else we're told that we need to separate ourselves from is those practices of sin. Not only where we're at and who we hang around with, but what we're doing. Paul told us in 1 Timothy 5:22, simply to keep thyself pure. We also need to keep ourselves pure. We need to purge ourselves from the sin. 2 Corinthians 7 verse 1 says to cleanse yourself from all filthiness of the flesh. But what are some of these practices we may fall into? What are some things that draw us away from God? This list could be very long. It could be go on and on for a while. But really, the two that stuck out in my mind is just simply our language. Something that can draw us away from God is the way we speak. And why do we speak like that? A lot of times we just try to fit in. So we may not necessarily come out and we're going to cuss, but we're going to tell jokes that probably we shouldn't. We're going to say words that kind of sound like we're saying what we're not supposed to, just so we act cool. We can be accepted. You know, we talk about drugs and alcohol. You know, we may be somewhere like we talked about earlier, places of sin, and we may not be actually drinking, but maybe we're going to grab a can of beer here and pour half of it out and just hold it the whole time. So people think we're given that impression that we're drinking, we're trying to fit in. But what is that truly doing for us? 1 Thessalonians 5 and verse 22 says to abstain from all appearances of evil. One thing that I remember growing up, and still to this day I see, is that I wish there was a thou shalt not for so many things, because there's so many things that just don't specifically, you're going to be asked all the time, well, why don't you do this, or why don't you speak like this? And we don't really have, well, the Bible says, thou shalt not, plain and clear. But this verse here speaks volumes to us. Abstain from all appearances of evil. So we need to be wise enough to identify these things that are harmful to our soul, things that are going to draw us away from God, and doing all it takes to avoid them. So after we separate ourselves from the places of sin, from the people of sin, and those things that we're doing in practicing sin, we need to surrender ourselves. Surrender ourselves through time. We mentioned this a little bit earlier. Speaking more towards the parents, but we as children, or the younger, should surrender ourselves through our time. We need to use our time wisely. Ephesians 5, 15 through 16 says, see then that you walk circumspectly, not as fools, but as wise, redeeming the time, because the days are evil. There was a statistic that I found many years ago when I was putting this together that I'm sure is kind of outdated, but I'm still going to use it as an example and reference it, which, again, the figures are probably up wrong and probably have exceeded more. But it's talking about the time we waste watching television. By the age of 20, the statistic said that the average American will have been exposed to 20,000 hours of television. So if you think about that for just a little bit, what could we have done with 20 hours or 20,000 hours of that wasted time? Again, this may be off by now, but at the time, 5,000 hours are what a typical undergraduate spends getting their bachelor. Just 5,000 hours. In 10,000 hours, you could have learned enough to become a doctor. You could have become a lawyer, or even an engineer. So we're only half the time we spent watching TV, we could have had an education to be a doctor, lawyer, engineer. In that time, we could have learned how to speak several languages and fluently. I'm still working on English, but you could have learned to read the Bible in both the original Greek and the Hebrew. You could have had enough time to walk completely around the world and written 2 books about it. We are going to give an account in the end with how we use our time. So let's make sure that we use it wisely. But how do we use our time? How can we use it wisely? We're not saying that some of the things we enjoy are bad things. Watching TV, I'm not saying it's a bad thing. I'm not saying being on the iPad or the computer is a bad thing. Sports is not a bad thing. But how can we use our time more wisely? Are we putting more focus on those things, or are we spending time studying the Bible? Are we giving more time to prayer? Are we trying to use that time to where we can help the church? Maybe not so much in the worship service, which that would be good too, but even just helping around the building. So, let's use our time wisely. We should also surrender ourselves through our speech. We talked about our language and everything earlier, but we're told that we need to have a pure speech in Ephesians 4 and verse 29, where it says, "Let no corrupt communication proceed out of your mouth, but that which is good to the use of edifying, and that it may administer grace unto the hearer." What we need to understand is within our speech today, it shows what's in our heart. What comes out of our mouths is usually what we're thinking. If you would turn to Proverbs 4, back to the Old Testament of Proverbs, we're going to read a few verses within that book. Proverbs 4, verse 23 says, "Keep thy heart with all diligence, for out of it are the issues of life." And while we've got Proverbs open, let's go straight to Proverbs 23 and verse 7. "For as he thinketh in his heart, so he is. Eat and drink, saith he to thee, but his heart is not with thee." You know, we've heard that old expression that you are what you eat. And the same thing is true spiritually. We are what we think. If we're constantly spending time studying, if we're constantly praying, then that's what's going to come out of us. That's what we're going to be speaking. That's how our actions are going to show. But if we're spending all our time taking in things of this world, that's what's going to come out as well. If you will turn to 2 Corinthians 10 and verse 5, we must strive to put every thought into captivity to the obedience of Christ. 2 Corinthians 10 and verse 5. Verse 5 reads, "Casting down imaginations and every high thing that exalteth itself against the knowledge of God, and bringing it into captivity, every thought, to the obedience of Christ." So we need to strive to have the mind of Christ. We truly do. We're told that in Philippians 2 as well. But if we have that mind of Christ like we should, this will help us know what to say. It'll help us know when to say it and how to say it and what we should do on a day-to-day basis. So now we've separated ourselves from places of sin, people of sin, practices. We've surrendered ourselves through our time and of our speech. Now we are told to deny ourselves. Jesus tells us in Luke 9, verse 23, that if any man will come after me, let him deny himself, take up his cross, and follow me. A lot of times we read this passage and we go over it quickly, or sometimes we dissect it in different avenues, but the one principle I want us to realize, just looking at this verse, is that there's a decision that we have to make. There's a choice that we have to make. He says, if anyone desires to come after me. So we have to make a decision before we go any further. But he goes on to say, let him deny himself. So there's a denial on our part that we have to deny our selfish ambitions. We have to sacrifice ourselves for God, for Jesus. The next thing he says, and take up his cross daily. There's a dedication that we have. We're dedicating our lives to Him. We must have that continual commitment that we will do whatever He asks and whenever He asks. You know, we understand this more on the worldly side of things, like when we're playing sports or doing anything, maybe work. When we're dedicated to something, we give it everything we've got. It doesn't matter the time of practice. It doesn't matter the length of the time we're at work. We have an end goal we're getting to, and we dedicate ourselves. So we should have that same mindset when we dedicate ourselves to Jesus. And then going right into that, we also see that He said, "And follow Me." There's a determination that we're going to follow Him wherever He leads. We also found something similar to this in Matthew 4, that the early disciples were told, "Follow Me and I will make you fishers of men." What impresses me most is that next verse. What's it say? It talks about these disciples immediately left their nets. They immediately followed Him. That was their livelihood. That was what they did every day. But they chose that they were determined that it didn't matter. We were going to immediately follow Jesus because He was everything to them. One thing when we talk about denying ourselves, especially as a young person, one of the things that we truly have to deny is our pride. And we talk about selfishness a lot, but our pride kind of goes right along with that. Something I've seen before, it was on a poster board that a man wrote, was, "Attention teenagers, if you are all tired of being hassled by your parents, now is the time for action. Leave your homes, pay your own way while you still know everything." Now, we joke about that, but that's reality. We think that we know so much more as a teenager than our parents. But we soon find out that's not the case. It seldom occurs that the teenagers will someday know just as little as their parents. This also was written by an unknown author, and I think that this is really true to our life. This is reality, and I'm going to go through this quickly, but this is our stage of our lives. So by 4 years old, we talk about our parents. They can do anything. I mean, there's times we think that they're superheroes. I mean, right now, even things I can do, anything and everything. And I'm going to let them believe that. Because by 8 years old, we think that parents know a lot. They're pretty smart. I don't know how they know so much. By 12 years old, my parents don't know quite everything. By 14, okay, my parents just don't know anything. We're starting to get to that point where we know the truth now. 16 years of age, mom and dad are hopeless and they are old-fashioned. They just don't get anything. By 18, we say, "I know so much more than them." By 25, you know, now we're starting to understand that mom and dad, the older they get, the wiser they're getting. By 35, you know, we're kind of in that stage usually of marriage and, you know, having a family, and we say, before we decide anything, let's ask the parents. Let's ask their opinion. By 45, we're saying, what would our parents have thought about it? And by 65, I wish I could talk it over with mom and dad. This speaks a lot of truth, I think, on our stage of life. But instead of being wrapped up in our own interest, we need to genuinely learn to submit to our parents, to genuinely love our parents. Let's look at a familiar passage in Ephesians 6. Ephesians 6, 1 through 3. It says, starting at verse 1, "Children, obey your parents in the Lord, for this is right. Honor thy father and mother, which is the first commandment with promise, that it may be well with thee, and thou mayest live long on the earth." There was an old illustration that I came across, too, that talked about a ruler that was going to conquer another city. But for some reason, there was two men in that city that he was going to take over that he was indebted to for some reason. So he gave permission to those two boys, those two young men, that they could take anything. He was going to save their lives before he conquered that city, and they could take anything out that they wanted to. Well, the two young men appeared at the gate of the city, one carrying their father and the other their mother. We need to ask ourselves, where do we place our parents in our own hearts? You know, we talked about a little bit ago, you know, the value we place on things and the joy, that, what brings us joy in life. And a lot of us that are older and with kids or families, we talk about that's what brings us our joy. But what about the younger? Did you think that that joy was your parents? Was it your family as well? And if not, I would encourage that we put a lot more emphasis on that today. So after denying ourselves, we need to stand ourselves. We're going to stand for something. But what should we stand for? We need to make our own stand for the Lord. Not our parents' stand or our grandparents' stand, but our own stand for the Lord. We talked about in the little classes and through VBS and everything about the different characters of the Bible that took stands. One I was thinking of was Daniel in the lion's den. You know, he could have easily lost his life, but he was going to take that stand for God, and God helped him. We talked about Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego not too long ago in the fiery furnace. And they were to the point where they could have easily lost their life being in that furnace. But it didn't matter. They knew that God was with them. God was going to take care of them. And we all learn a valuable lesson from that, from their stand. And we need to be like them. We're told that we need to put on the whole armor of God. If we don't make our stand for the Lord and His cause, we will not stand on. He will not stand on behalf of us in the last day. So we need to make a stand for Him, so He will be there for us. So one thing, as we're bringing this all to a close, we need to make sure that we make God a vital part in our life. The younger, you know, we need to make sure of this, but this even goes a little further to us all here today. We need to make God a vital part in our life. We need to make up our minds that we will, for the rest of our lives, no matter how long that might be, we're going to worship with His people. We're going to make a stand for Him, just as He commanded. We're going to study the Word ourselves, that we can keep our lives pure. We started this lesson talking about the song, "How Shall the Young Secure Their Heart?" And talking about that came from Psalms 119 and verse 9. Well, the end of that verse tells us how we shall keep our hearts pure. And that is to take heed. The end of that verse says, "Taking heed thereunto according to thy word." So right there He's given us the answer that if we study, if we're soaked in His word, we can keep ourselves and our lives secure. So don't be a weak, don't be a sick, lukewarm Christian. We need to develop ourselves into a knowledgeable, a capable worker of God. And throughout the years, if we do this, we will come leading each other to salvation. And that's one thing we need to understand. We're not just in it for ourselves. At a certain age, we think that we're in life all by ourselves together. But really, we need one another to help us through. So put your heart and soul into it, just like you would do any other thing. And be proud of yourself. And because if you live the life that God has designed, we will, in the end, be proud of the things, our accomplishments. So in closing, I just want to recap again a little bit. How do we keep our lives? How shall the young secure their hearts? By separating themselves from sin. Whether that's the places, whether that's the people, whether the practices of sin, but separate yourself from them. We're to surrender ourselves through our time. We're going to surrender ourselves through our speech. We're going to deny ourselves, our selfishness, deny anything that we really want, and know that God's way is better. And we're going to make a stand for God, even when it's not easy, when it's something that's not, you know, acceptable within our relationships. But we're going to stand for God, and we're going to develop ourselves to where we can grow. We can grow to be better Christians. We can rub that example off on our friends and those in the world. And as the ages to come, with these bodies of ours have long been decaying back to dust, we can stand on Mount Zion singing this new song of Moses the Lamb. And when asked, "Who are these arrayed in white robes before the throne?" the answer will come, "These are the redeemed of the earth, who followed the Lamb whithersoever He went. And these are those who have washed the robe and made them white in the blood of the Lamb." So this morning, I ask you to think on these things. Think about the life you're living. And are you going with the world? Or are you separating yourself, surrendering yourself, and developing yourself into be that godly Christian? So if there's anything we can do for you this morning, we'd ask you to come forward as together we stand and sing.